Welcome to Crunching Tackles, where we break down the hardest-hitting social issues in sports. On today's show, we talk about the history and significance of the All-Star Game in American sports. Why is this uniquely American concept part of our annual sporting tradition? And which one is the best? My name is Chad Wiley, and with me, as always, is John Neckerstav. And John, how are you doing on this, let's be honest, pretty light week when it comes to sporting news and headlines?
Yeah, it's unfortunate because there's not a lot in the pop culture realm either, or I would just say, like, we'll just ditch the sports for this week. But I don't know. I was looking at the headlines, and I was like, there is almost nothing of any significance happening aside from the MLB All-Star Game. Like, there was literally nothing interesting that I saw. There's almost no, I mean, the Tour de France is happening, I guess. I guess we're in the middle of baseball season, so there's nothing, like, particularly exciting going on there. I don't know. It's just, like, the sports world is kind of at a standstill for a little bit until, I guess, until the NFL season starts.
Are you a big Tour de France guy?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I know literally nothing about cycling. I don't think I know a single cyclist aside from Lance Armstrong, you know, like every average person does. And the most I know about the Tour de France, I guess, is that he doped his way to winning the Tour de France. So, beyond that, honestly, right? I don't know. Do you know anything about cycling?
Not, other than that, like, it's, like, hard, and I don't do it well. I get tired going up the hills in my neighborhood.
There's something, like, uniquely tiring about going up hills on a bicycle. That, like, if you were walking up the same hill or even running up that hill, a la Kate Bush, you are significantly less tired.
I was definitely the kid who, like, got off my bike and then carried it, like rolled it up the hill.
You were up a hill pusher.
Yeah.
You caved.
I mean, I wasn't going to overly exert myself as a child, nor do I in the present day.
No, I would push back on that, but I'm very much the same most of the time, so we're just here. We are here as a podcast to talk about other people exerting themselves.
And we do have
from the comfort of our own rooms.
We do. Do you want to talk about pop culture or sports first? I'll let you kind of
set
the menu here.
I think let's talk about the pop culture first.
Okay.
What we are here today to talk about 2023's upcoming Barbie movie. No, I'm just joking. It's not a coincidence that Oppenheimer and the Barbie movie, I believe, are coming out on the exact same day. I think they're directly set up in competition for each other.
The Barbie movie is going to get crushed.
I don't know, bro. I'm not going to lie. I do think Oppenheimer is going to be a good movie, or a great movie even. And I'm incredibly excited for Oppenheimer, and much more excited for Oppenheimer than the Barbie movie. That being said, if Minions The Rise of Gru is anything to go by, I think the Barbie movie will actually be incredibly popular.
You think the Barbie fan base is larger than the Minions fan base?
See, well, I don't know. I mean, you are bringing in a whole...
I guess Barbie is multi-generational.
Yeah, and Minions... Well, Minions does seem to have a multi-generational appeal, though. That's the strange thing. So I think the jury is out, honestly. But it does seem like there's a lot of... There's an all-star cast for the Barbie movie.
Yeah.
That will bring in a lot of people. And it does seem to just be generating a lot of hype. So there's never been a movie like that, has there?
I don't know anything
about Barbie movies.
But also, John, we don't really want to talk about the Barbie movie too much, do we?
That's correct.
So Oppenheimer is the next Christopher Nolan movie.
Correct.
He's a pretty lucrative, pretty successful film director. It has, you know, a lot of the standard Christopher Nolan cast.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Cillian Murphy. It's got Matt Damon. It's who else is in this? Rami Malek, Florence Pugh,
Robert Downey Jr.,
Emily Blunt, I think.
Mm-hmm. Emily Blunt. Yep.
So some new additions to the Christopher Nolan acting list, but some familiar faces as well. It's, I guess, I don't know a whole lot about the actual Oppenheimer, other than that he was part of the nuclear weapon, like nuclear in World War II.
Right.
So I don't know if I'll, you know, find a biography on him before, or just kind of go into this movie with no expectations. This is, I believe, Christopher Nolan's first biopic, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's one of the main reasons why I'm excited about this, because this is an area that Nolan hasn't really touched before. I also just... Everything he does is great, almost universally. So I think it'll be good, as long as he doesn't get too complicated with his time things like he always does. You know, I think Tenet kind of, which I know you haven't seen yet, but Tenet kind of strayed a little bit from developing his characters well and focused a lot on like the ideas he was trying to get across, like his physics ideas, which I think got a little bit complicated and lost viewers a little bit. So I'm interested to see him kind of go back to like a character-driven story and see what he does with that. And also just Cillian Murphy is great. So the fact that he's the lead makes me incredibly happy, I will not lie.
Yeah, it has a really, really... We're talking about this because the poster came out this week, which is a great poster of Cillian Murphy playing Oppenheimer, just like enveloped in pillars of flame. It's very, very cool.
All the internet is laughing about, you know, Christopher Nolan has such a love of practical effects, right? And, you know, he did blow up an entire jetliner for Tenet.
Blew up an entire building in The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm. So there is kind of a question, right, that... You know, how far is Christopher Nolan willing to go to film this movie?
Will he drop a nuclear weapon? Is that the question being asked?
I think that is the question that's being asked.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'll be honest. I hope the answer is yes. I need a red carpet reveal. I need a red carpet reveal if that actually happened.
I do find this particularly fascinating, though, just because of how, like, much I think you and I, and a lot of people, but, like, revere all the Christopher Nolan movies we've seen for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, The Dark Knight and Dunkirk are both pretty much perfect movies, in my opinion. And then you have Inception, Interstellar, and then the other two Batman movies, which are all various tiers of
all excellent.
Mm-hmm. Great to excellent. It's just, he doesn't seem to miss often, and his highs can be... really quite extraordinary. Dunkirk and Interstellar, particularly, just as you know, Dunkirk's more of a vibes movie, but Interstellar is just a mind-bending feat.
Yeah, and like even his lows feel like he's trying to achieve something in a way that like a lot of directors, when they hit a low, you know, like it's not out of laziness, you know. Like the lows Nolan hits, when he does hit them, are always because he's like trying to do too much.
Yeah.
You know, rather than too little, which I do appreciate because a lot
is
of
Dark
directors
Knight your
just
favorite?
Kind of pass through. Yeah, definitely. Dark Knight's okay. In my top five movies, I think.
Okay.
I don't know what comes after that. Memento, which you need to see as we were talking about, is not one of my favorites as a movie, but it's such a unique movie. Like there's a YouTube video of him explaining like the way he created the timeline of Memento. And it is the most like complicated thing that you have ever seen in your life as he's like diagramming it. He's like, he just looks like a mad scientist. And I like the fact that we have like a mad scientist movie director on the loose right now.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me happy.
Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. I think I do want to go into it with a little bit more understanding about Oppenheimer. If you know anything about me, mm-hmm. you know that biography is my favorite genre of book. And I'm sure it wouldn't be hard to find one if I needed. Right now I'm reading the Walter Isaacson biography of Steve Jobs, which is excellent.
Who is a fascinating character. I should read that eventually. I've never really been a biography guy, though.
I didn't know that Steve Jobs... we're getting completely sidetracked. I didn't know that he owned Pixar as well as Apple.
Yep. They started
it. Yeah, amazing. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, one other quick pop culture thing, John. Let's do, like, just briefly, let's do, you know, 3 minutes on... what's upcoming. I was wrong. It is an early September release date. The Rings of Power, mm-hmm. Amazon TV show set, I guess, like a long time before The Lord of the Rings.
Right. Yeah. So it's after doing some extra reading, it's Second Age, I think, for all you nerds out there. And Chad unearthed this fact, but they don't have the rights to the Silmarillion.
That's correct.
Or anything
which is,
in
which
there.
Is Tolkien's, you know, definitive world-building story.
Right.
In the Lord of the Rings.
So it's moderately bizarre that they're trying to make a pre-Lord of the Rings series without Tolkien's primary source work for pre-Lord of the Rings content. So on the one hand, I'm like, that's odd. But on the other hand, I do think, and we were talking about this, I do think that it makes me a little less... worried about them contradicting source material, because I think it'll just means that they're just going to go in directions kind of unfilled by whatever Tolkien made. I don't know. I think I'm cautiously optimistic. I am excited for the show. I think it's going to be a good show. It's place in the Lord of the Rings like universe will be interesting to see. I think it's the biggest question mark for me right now.
I think the reason why and we've talked about this before in this podcast, but I think the reason why I'm excited about it is that it is being made in similar filmmaking style as Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. which The Hobbit deviated from, as The Hobbit went a more CGI computer graphic approach with you know, the set pieces and also with some of the characters like the White Orc, whereas Lord of the Rings was very much costuming and makeup and practical sets in the real mm-hmm. world. And this show also is practical sets in the real world. And I think it's going to be really, really fun. I don't know any of the extended Lord of the Rings universe other than The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, so this is all mm-hmm. going to be new to me. But honestly, John, like I told you before, I'm really excited for a new story because so yeah. much of this Marvel and Star Wars stuff is, as we've talked about, has become pretty predictable, either because the storytelling is predictable or because it has, you know, explicit source material. Like we talked about, we knew how Kenobi was going to end. Or
right.
if you want to know whatever happens to any Marvel character, there are comic books that will tell you. But I'm excited for a brand new story that I won't, mm-hmm. you know, won't know about. And that's going to be fun. It is being composed by Howard Shore. I know you wanted to mention that.
Yes, it's very important. And so not the whole soundtrack, just the main theme.
The theme,
is being
okay.
composed by Howard Shore, which, you know, I just, as both of us being soundtrack guys, Howard Shore's Lord of the Rings soundtrack holds a very special place in my heart.
Yeah, he recently reunited with Viggo Mortensen for David Cronenberg's Crime of the Future.
Oh, really?
And did a quite, like, techno horror score for Crimes of the Future. The score is actually quite brooding. It's very good.
I think he actually, if I remember correctly, he may have actually started with horror scores.
Mm.
So that's definitely been in his wheelhouse for a long time.
Crimes of the Future definitely isn't a movie that I think would appeal to our podcast audience by and large, but I think you, John, should definitely check out the score okay. for that movie. Anyway, let's do some sports, John. And I want to start with the ESPYs, which is probably the most mm-hmm. recent big sporting event. The ESPYs is like the equivalent to the Grammys or the Oscars or whatever. It's, you know, it's an award show for athletics. And, you know, they do categories like best basketball player, best soccer player, best whatever. But what I want to talk about is one of the special awards that they do each year, which is the Arthur Ashe Courage Award, which goes to figures who have been, you know, particularly courageous in their lives or in social justice. You know, some prominent examples of winners are, you know, people like Nelson Mandela, Billie Jean King, and Muhammad Ali. And this year it went to Vitali Klitschko, who was the mayor of Kyiv, who has been, you know, on the front lines of the war in Ukraine, along with his brother Vladimir Klitschko. They have, you know, when Kyiv was being bombed, they didn't flee. You know, Vitali went to the front lines to fight with soldiers, as did his brother. And it was really, really remarkable to see them be honored. They did a virtual interview. The award was received on their behalf by Dwayne Johnson, which mm-hmm. I thought was cool as well. But I think that was the highlight of the ESPYs for me. I loved that part.
Yeah, that's awesome. I also saw that Otani won Men's mm-hmm. Athlete, which is pretty cool. He's been balling. I also saw that Kylian Mbappe won Soccer Athlete of the Year,
mm-hmm.
which is odd to me. I don't know. Maybe they don't follow soccer enough, but I really don't feel like he was the best player in the world.
I'm not sure who does the voting. I think it's ESPN, you know, because it's an ESPN production award show. I guess maybe he is, like, the bet? I don't know. It was interesting to me. The Otani I definitely liked.
Yes, I do like Otani winning. Who has just been breaking record after record, doing insane stuff. I heard someone, I forget who even said it now, said it to me, but they said Otani is a player built for the Yankees one day. And that was an interesting thought, and I don't think I disagree with them.
I think it's interesting. And, you know, as
he seems
brand,
to give a Yankees vibe.
Yeah. I think the question is, he will only go to a team that will let him be a two-way player. And so
Don't the Yankees have a history of that?
Well, no, because Babe Ruth did not pitch for the Yankees.
Oh,
They didn't let him pitch.
Interesting.
Once he pitched for the Red Sox, but once he joined the Yankees, they made him be a hitter only. Mm. Obviously, that was like a century ago, so times could have changed. But so that'd be. I know that that is the number one factor in terms of his decision making is being able to continue to, you know, do this really unprecedented thing.
Which is what makes him. I mean, he's not like the best in either category, but because he's both, he's far and away better than everybody else.
You can argue that he's top five in both categories.
Yeah. No, but I don't think he's number one in either of them.
But he's, you know, he is elite in both. It's not like
absolutely.
he's just above average. But we've done a whole episode on Shohei Ohtani, so
we have.
You can go back and revisit that. And I'm sure we'll revisit him in the future. John, there's a story that you want to talk about, which I will not, you know, make too big a fuss on, even though chess is not actually a sport, and we are a sports podcast. But because we also talk about pop culture, I will allow you to talk about a game, I would say.
It is a game. I won't fight too hard on it being a sport, because I've heard people argue that it's a sport. I'm still not convinced. So we are discussing the board game of chess briefly because there is some big news out of the chess world.
This is a significant story.
It's actually a very big story, and it's big because Grandmaster Magnus Carlsen is far and away the most well-known chess player of our current age, and maybe, I mean, by far one of the most well-known chess players of all time. He is, I believe, 31. He has been the world chess champion since 2013 and has defended it multiple times and has not lost that title. He's the number one ranked player and became the world's number one ranked player at age 19. So this young man has kind of taken the chess world by storm in a way that, you know, like Bobby Fischer or Garry Kasparov did back in their times within the chess world. But what is the big news out of the chess world is he had an upcoming world championship match to defend his title against Russia's Jan Nepomniachtchi. And he announced, I guess it was 2 days ago, Magnus Carlsen announced that he would not be defending his title. He just said, I am not playing. I am abdicating. And so the world championship title would then be decided between Nepomniachtchi and China's Ding Li Ren to compete for the title. And Carlsen, what's interesting about this is Carlsen is very much at the top of his game. He's still going to be ranked number one because he intends to continue playing professionally. But he basically just said he's bored. Essentially, he's won too much at the World Championships. He said he doesn't enjoy the World Championships, and even though he enjoys tournaments. He's not retiring, but he's just not defending his world title anymore. He literally said, he said on his new podcast, he said, I am not motivated to play another match. I simply feel that I don't have a lot to gain. Although I'm sure a match would be interesting for historical reasons and all of that, I don't have any inclination to play, and I will simply not play the match. So he just said, I'm on top, I'm done, and walked off.
That's fascinating.
There's very few examples of professional athletes, you know, quote unquote, who have ever done that at the top of their game.
Yeah, I mean, because you couldn't even count someone like Peyton Manning, who won a championship in his final season, but it was not like he was at the top of his game, and was just like, I'm done with this. You know, the first American equivalent that comes to my mind is someone we've talked about, like Calvin Johnson or Andrew Luck, who both retired from the NFL, still very successful at like pre-age 30.
Right. But Andrew Luck wasn't winning Super Bowls.
Right.
You know,
but this is fascinating that he's just like, well, one, he didn't retire, right, but he's just bored, so he just vacated an event.
Right. So it's an interesting move.
Because I don't know chess well, does the world championship happen like in a tournament format, or is it more like boxing where there's like a single challenger and like the winner of that single, you know, like in a heavyweight title fight, there's the champion and the challenger, and the winner takes it? Or is it more like a traditional like bracketed tournament where winner gets it?
My understanding, I don't know actual professional chess that well either, but my understanding is that it is it's a challenger type thing, because the championships was going to be him against the person who earned the right to play against him. So you do have to go through various progressions of play. I don't know how it works exactly to be able to challenge him again, but it was just going to be like I don't know how many games they play or anything, but they were up against each other one-on-one to see.
So, it's possible that Carlson just wanted to be the challenger for a change and wanted to, I don't know. That's
it. Maybe he'll come back, but it did sound like he didn't want to. He wasn't interested in competing for the title anymore. But he is also far and away number one, and I don't think we'll lose that ranking anytime soon, just because he's that much better than everyone else. So
it's fascinating.
So yeah, there's today's chess news. It feels like, I don't know, like it's like the equivalent of Michael Jordan in the peak of his career winning an NBA title and then just being like, you know what, I'm done, guys.
Which he did do.
To be fair, yeah, he did.
And he came back and he did it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe that is the best example, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Might be Jordan in the, I guess it would have been after the 94 championship. No, 93. Yeah, 93 championship. Yeah, that's what, yeah, sorry.
I know.
The 93 championship.
I knew that.
When he walked away and then went to play baseball. Hmm, that's interesting.
So there's your chess news for the year.
No, can we do one more thing? Because you have a bullet point here that he is like the cool chess player.
Oh, yeah.
What does that mean? I don't know who Magnus Carlsen really is, so I'm curious.
So Carlsen, very much, if you know any chess players, Magnus Carlsen is the chess player that you would know. He, you know, has a lot of sponsorships. He has a pretty big social media following.
He's young too, right?
He's 31.
Okay.
You know, he does things with, like, he's a big soccer guy. So, like, I think he did a kickoff in La Liga at some point, like a ceremonial kickoff. People, like, definitely of anyone, people know who he is. And he's relatively, like, I'm pretty sure, like, soccer players know him and stuff. And he's, like, done, like, Twitch streams and whatever. Like, he's very much the face of chess as, like, a brand right now in the kind of, like, social media age that we live in. Obviously, chess is not, like, a particularly, like, cool game.
Yeah.
But if anyone is, like, cool within the game, it would be Carlsen right now.
Hmm.
So, he's an interesting figure. And so, his decision in that regard is intriguing. And I did find myself thinking kind of in the aftermath of the decision, you know, within this generation, we are starting to see young players more and more kind of make decisions like this.
Yeah, it reminded me of like Simone Biles when you first mentioned the story to me.
Yeah, Simone Biles, obviously it's like a different situation from Naomi Osaka, but like a similar kind of like with her decision in the French Open, like, they feel in like a similar ballpark of stepping back from competition in a way that, you know, maybe wouldn't have been perceived as normal, you know, a couple decades ago.
But it may just be a healthier perspective on life.
It may be.
Yeah.
I think it's just another example, specifically in individual sports, of a changing mindset, I guess, about athletics, quote unquote.
Hmm. That's fascinating. I think I'll check out his podcast, which I guess is new.
Yeah.
And maybe see if I can learn more about Magnus Carlsen. John, the other big, I guess, sports thing that happened this week was the MLB All-Star Game. And, well, the Home Run Derby was on Monday. The All-Star Game was on Tuesday. For, like, the ninth straight time, the American League won. Mm-hmm. The National League just can't really seem to catch a break in the All-Star Game. But we wanted to take this opportunity to talk a little bit more about All-Star Games in general, and the premise which I'm approaching this conversation, and really like the position I wanted to make, was that Major League Baseball has by far the best All-Star game.
Okay.
Just in terms of the quality of the game is the closest is the most similar to the actual high quality game. Like it's the most realistic and most good of the four American All-Star games. So,
right. Can you describe the format? Like, how does that line up for you?
The format of
the MLB All-Star game.
Oh, like, well, so it's just a traditional 9-inning game.
Mm-hmm.
With the two rosters, the All-Stars of the NL versus the All-Stars of the AL. The managers can decide who pitches what inning. They can bring on substitutions. You know, once you lead, you can't come back. So it's basically just a Major League Baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
But what's different about it compared to other sports is that, so like, when you watch the NBA All-Star game, for example, you see the lack of defense being played. When you watch the Pro Bowl, well, the Pro Bowl is another problem. One of the problems is that like there really isn't a lot of like hard tackling. And the NHL All-Star game don't even play 6-on-6. They play 3-on-3.
Mm.
So it's a completely different game. But like when you watch the Major League Baseball All-Star game, you're going to see 100 mile per hour pitches, and you're going to see 450 foot home runs, and you're going to see, you know, as you know, outstanding defense, as good of defense as these elite athletes can play. They play, you know, the quality of the game suffers no drop off from the regular season or the traditional postseason. And it just makes it a really fun watch because you could argue that the All-Star game is actually the best possible version of baseball. In part because each pitcher generally is given one inning. So you'll have nine different pitchers from each team. They'll each do one inning. And so you're getting like the 18 freshest pitchers who are asked to do like 15 to 20 pitches total. And they just go out there and just crush it. It's incredible. It really is a good product.
Right, which makes it, like you said, I guess the closest any of these actually get. I think baseball just lends itself the best to an exhibition game like that, just because of the physical nature of baseball, because of like the way teamwork functions in baseball, at least in my outsider's understanding, you know, that like I think it's a little bit easier to make those kind of like systems mesh together. Like an all-star team in soccer doesn't like, because everything's so based on moving together, like it is harder to like play as a unit in that regard. Which baseball just naturally, based on the fact that everything's a little bit more static, I think makes it easier for the All-Star game to be like actually interesting.
One of the most impressive parts is the chemistry of the infield, like on defense. Like I remember in the first inning of this All-Star game, this one guy from the Cleveland Guardians, I can't remember his name, caught a ball. He was a second baseman, and he just kind of like threw it behind his back to Tim Anderson, the shortstop, who like made the tag and threw it to first. And I think it's because like each player has a set position on the diamond,
right,
that like you can like seamlessly interchange the defensive players, and they instantly understand the flow and chemistry of that game. Yeah, it was just a really fun product, and the Home Run Derby is also amazing. You know, every single one of these four have kind of implemented some sort of like skills challenge as well as the actual sport. So like hockey has a skills competition, like a fastest skating and a hardest slap shot, and then basketball obviously has the Home Run Derby and basketball has the 3-point contest and the dunk contest. Football, you know, I guess they've been doing like weird stuff. They have like a dodgeball game,
yeah,
and other interesting things. Football that the NFL does, and then but the Home Run Derby is also like one of my favorite things that baseball does every year. I just love it.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy watching the Home Run Derby. It definitely, I don't know, there's something just unique about just seeing people try to like just smash balls out of the park for an hour or something. And then obviously I think close to that is the dunk contest for the NBA.
Yeah.
In terms of what are, like, obviously everyone loves the dunk contest. Sometimes they're more lame than others, but like overall, the dunk contest is a great, enjoyable performance. I do think it's, to your point, the MLB All-Star game is the most popular of all four of these All-Star games, which I don't think used to be the case. I think the Pro Bowl used to be the highest, but the All-Star game has gradually replaced the Pro Bowl due to the Pro Bowl's complete lack of interest. To the point that Roger Goodell at one point, I think, said on Sirius XM that he was thinking about removing the Pro Bowl entirely unless the players put in more effort, which I think is hilarious.
If you changed it to two-hand touch or flag football, it wouldn't look very different from the actual Pro Bowl. They just don't tackle, really.
Which I don't think anyone, like, even if they were playing flag football, like, what's the point?
Yeah.
I think them playing a Madden tournament like they did during COVID is more interesting than the actual Pro Bowl.
The other thing, we can talk about the Pro Bowl specifically. The other thing, like, that really makes it such a significant drop-off is that, so, like, the premise of the All-Star game is to bring in the best players to play. So, like, whether the fans vote or the fellow players vote or whoever's voting, you know, you get to, it's the best of the best. And when the Pro Bowl a few years ago switched to being the week before the Super Bowl instead of the week after the Super Bowl, it means that the Super Bowl players don't play the Pro Bowl. So
ever.
Presumably, like, so which, like, you would also think that, like, some of the players in the Super Bowl teams would be some of the best players. So you're really not even getting the best players. You're getting the best players who were not good enough to actually play in the Super Bowl as the Pro Bowl, which is just really, really dumb.
And sometimes not even all of them.
Right, sure.
Like, yeah, some players just don't choose to participate. You know, so obviously, like, being chosen to the Pro Bowl is an honor that people do, like, view as something important. But playing in the Pro Bowl is basically completely irrelevant. And no one... I don't think I've spoken to a single person who enjoys the Pro Bowl. Like, I remember watching last year, seeing Mac Jones run through a hole in the defense and just, like, sprint all the way down the field as the defense, like, kind of, like, plodded along trying to catch up. It was just pathetic looking. I was like, if Mac Jones would never do that in a real NFL game.
If Mac Jones can run 70 yards untouched, that tells you just exactly what the quality of this particular game is. I liked your comment. I do want to talk about a little bit just like where they kind of rank. You know, you mentioned that MLB does the best ratings. Mm-hmm. Although you said, I guess their ratings were down a little bit this year. Is that right?
Yeah, the ratings basically for all the All-Star stuff across the board are down.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. But I do think it makes sense that baseball is the best. The hockey one is, they've done something new in the past couple of years, which I think will make it more interesting, where they actually do a knockout tournament.
So interesting.
Instead of two teams, there's actually four teams because there's four divisions. Mm-hmm. There's the Metro, the Atlantic, the Coastal, and the something else. I think the West or something. And it's and they play, you know, three skaters versus three skaters, and then there's two semifinals and then a final, which is unique, and it makes it a little bit more exciting. It's a little bit like shorter games. I do like that. I've watched that, I think, once or twice with the new format. The basketball one, they also try to do something unique. We talked about where they, you know, instead of playing to a minute total in the fourth quarter, you play to a point total, which has made the fourth quarter slightly more competitive in terms of, like, actually playing defense. But it also means that you can win a game, as happened the first time they did this, on a Anthony Davis walk-off free throw. Which is a fairly anticlimactic way to end a basketball game. So again, I think people are still trying to figure out exactly like how to make this work. But I do think that baseball, with their, you know, let's just play baseball. And you mentioned like the way that works in the sport, where, you know, the hitter and the pitcher having their duel isn't dependent on any team chemistry, and the defense is pretty, you know, you can really, really get the quality stuff you're looking for.
Right.
My last thought, John, is I don't know exactly how all of these events are. I know a lot of them have fan voting as a big way to determine the rosters, whether the starting or the reserves. But something that baseball does that's awesome, that Rob Manfred does, is he allows a commissioner's choice for legacy. So if a person is toward the end of their career, maybe they weren't good, but they weren't going to get voted in by fans, the commissioner can decide, no, this guy's going to play. And so this year, the commissioner did that for Albert Pujols. He was a commissioner's choice, which was amazing, not just for the game, but also for the home run derby, in which he won a round. You know, he beat Carl Schwarber in the first round, was mobbed by the rosters of both teams. It was a really special moment. He was in a bonus round, and you could just see him smiling as he was hitting his home runs. And it was just, it was really cool for him. And I think that that's something that is, you know, that's also unique to baseball. That's a nice touch that they do to allow that.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, I think there's definitely a place in the ecosystem for these games, for better or for worse at times. But I do think that there's a demand for them, which is why they are retained. I think I do agree from everything we've discussed. It seems like the MLB one is probably the best, like just the ecosystem of the All-Star world for the MLB. I think it is difficult, like that uncompetitive feel in a lot of them, I think, is what makes them as like TV entertainment a little bit challenging to actually keep them interesting, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like watching the NBA All-Star game, I am largely uninterested.
I think unless, I was with you the last one.
Wait.
We were sitting in Airbnb. Yeah, you were editing the newspaper, and I think I was the only one even paying any sort of attention to it.
Yeah, well, because every so often I looked up and I was like, oh, Steph Curry hit a really nice three. That was nice.
Which
and
he
that
does.
Was like all I cared about, right?
Yeah, sure.
So you know, I think they're not going to go away, but I do think that like there is a problem there, but it's just hard to overcome the fact that like the players want to be there but don't want to actually play, basically.
So let me
and
ask
it will
you,
be hard.
Let me ask you one more question, which is like I think that's a good point. Like, yeah, if I was, you know, a defensive linebacker and this was a meaningless game, I wouldn't want to hit anybody too. Like, but I mentioned in the intro that this is like, I said this is a uniquely American concept. Like, why don't other, like, do you have any idea of why, like, European soccer or other people haven't implemented, like, this kind of thing? Like, is it just, like, something that's unique to the American fan base where individual players can be just as important as the teams? Or, I guess I don't want to do too much, like, philosophizing about it, but I'm just curious why, you know, why isn't there a Premier League All-Star game, if you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't have a, my soccer knowledge doesn't reach, like, in detail far enough back to this era, but I do know that there were occasionally games, like, I know there in the 80s, there was some kind of, I think, like, England 11 versus, like, World 11 game that happened.
Okay.
Where, like, the Premier League, I think, or what, I guess it was the championship at the time, the first division, would, like, collect players and play against other leagues in kind of an all-star system. So I think that has at least happened a few times. I don't think there's ever been, like, an official all-star game or anything like that. So I know the concept, like, doesn't necessarily exist on a yearly basis. I think the idea has happened in the soccer world at various points. But I guess it just hasn't... It probably hasn't caught on, honestly, because... Firstly, because there isn't, like, the natural conference divides, right? Where, you know, you have, like, you know, the best players from, like, one half of the Premier League and the
best
players.
Yeah, how would you split the teams?
It's not split up at all, yeah. Right? And the other thing, I think, is that there's less of a gap in the market, right? Because the best teams from each country in Europe already play each other, right? Mm-hmm. Which means that there's less of appeal to be like, what if all the best players in each league played each other? Because you kind of like, you get a taste of that.
So what you're saying is Manchester City versus Liverpool is the Premier League All-Star game.
Yeah. Basically, or like even yeah. International soccer to a degree, right, is not the same because you're not playing like the best players who play in your country, but you are getting the best players from your country. And I think like, as a result, like, though it's not the same, I think you do, like, there's less of a demand for that to happen, I think.
Yeah, I do know that more recently, so Major League Soccer has a weird All-Star game. I didn't mention them before.
It's super weird.
Where, you know, rather than be MLS East versus MLS West, all of the MLS All-Stars are on one team, and then they just play a random European team.
Right.
So I know that, like, in 2019, I think they just, like, played Atletico Madrid. It was, like, MLS All-Stars versus Atletico Madrid. And it's just, so that's, like, very weird. Because it's, like, for the European team, it's just, like, a friendly while they're off for the summer, like, on their tours, like all the soccer teams do. Like, I know Bayern Munich and Manchester City and Barcelona are all in America right now just playing MLS teams and friendlies. Mm-hmm. So something kind of similar to that. But I think that All-Star game is weird and probably not very successful, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, it also has been replaced by playing against the Liga MX All-Stars.
Oh, interesting. That's new.
Last year was the first time they did that. So that's kind of I think that's an interesting format, actually, which they are trying to like increase competition with Liga MX a bit.
John, I think we're gonna kind of wrap it up here. I do want to ask one just kind of question for fun. And this is a little bit of time for some self-reflection. John, my question is, if you had to compete in either the home run derby, the three-point contest, the NHL slap shot, the fastest shot contest, or play in the NFL dodgeball game against NFL players, which of those would be your like most likely and your least likely to do?
Well, I can't shoot basketballs, so the three-point shooting one would probably be my least likely. I will never hit a home run, but, like, given the force of the pitcher, like, not that I'd, like... Well, actually, no, because they're not pitching it that hard, are they?
They pitch at whatever speed... They'll pitch at whatever speed the player wants it at.
Yeah. So that would require me generating a lot of power.
Yeah, usually.
I think in terms of success, I think the home run derby would probably be the bottom.
Okay.
Being realistic. Like, okay. I have hit threes before. I have never hit a home run. Am I consistent at hitting three-pointers? Absolutely not. But I'm more likely to do that than to hit a home run. I think I'm most likely to participate in the dodgeball tournament, okay. just for entertainment value.
Sure, sure.
I think those would be my two. What would you say?
Yeah, I would say I definitely can't do the hockey one because not only could I not like hit a fast puck if I was like on my feet on carpet, but the fact that you would have to do it on skates, I would just have no way to generate any momentum whatsoever.
Mm, absolutely not.
So I would have like no way to like plant my feet. I would just fall. I think that I could, you know, if I get 25 three-pointers, I'm at least making four of them mm-hmm. around that whole, you know, arc. So, I, you know, that's okay. The home run derby, I probably wouldn't hit a single home run. I think the dodgeball I actually could do pretty well in. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'm a slender guy, so I'd be hard to hit. I have a decent arm, and there's some, like, big targets out there. Like, there's mm-hmm. some big boys out there. so I really think that I would do the dodgeball would be my most likely, and the NHL one would be my least likely.
Okay, interesting.
That's my answer.
Okay, I appreciate that. Do you think you could hit a home run?
Well, like off of like a MLB pitcher or generating my own power in a batting practice?
Well, because I mean, they're not actually really, they're just kind of tossing it to you. They're not really pitching it.
I mean, they'll
you.
Do it as fast as you. I think it's like 60 miles an hour or something like that. Yeah. It's just not slow, mm-mm. but it's not major league pitching. Oh, man. Could I hit a home run? See, the thing is, there I've seen like MLB players who like approximate my very slender body type, like mm-hmm. do it, but I don't think that I have it in. I don't think I can get the ball that far enough. I just don't. Yeah,
that's completely fair. There's no way I would.
Yeah,
like absolutely
yeah,
no way.
Yeah, I don't think so. So yeah, I would do the dodgeball, and I think okay. I could actually like. You know, if there's like 20 guys in there, I think I'm making it to like at least like the top seven. I think I'm.
Yeah, it depends on like the build of the player. Like if we're going against wide receivers, like no way. But if we're
it's usually a mix of like there's a few offensive linemen, there's mm-hmm. a couple quarterbacks, there's a like you know there's a wide group of people.
As long as I get the linemen out, I'll be happy. You know, if the linemen stay in the game longer than me, I'll be disappointed. But beyond
that, that's fair. I think that's all we got this week, John. Do you have any other thing you want to talk about or any other thoughts?
No, I think that's all I've got for the listeners this week.
Oh man. Okay. Well, this has been a lot of fun. We made something out of a pretty light week.
That's our specialty, honestly.
Honestly, that's true. And hopefully sports will give us some more content. There were some things that like we could have talked about. Like we could have talked about Charles Barkley joining LIV, but we've kind of talked about LIV too much. We could have talked. He's not happening, but he's in the good. He's talking to LIV as an analyst.
As a commentator? Charles. Yeah. That's disappointing.
So, like, I don't really want to talk about that because we've kind of like overdone the LIV thing.
Yeah.
You know, nothing new on the Brittany Griner situation. So we're continuing to monitor some stuff, but there's just not a whole lot going on right now. But I think this was a fun episode, and I'm glad we did it. Hopefully next week we'll have some more content to talk about. It's also nice to have a break from, you know, Marvel and Star Wars, at least for the rest of July and into the first part of August. So a nice way to recharge and focus on some other content, John.
Not that I was focusing on Marvel to begin with.
No, you weren't, certainly not. But when Peaky Blinders can get my undivided attention, that's always a good thing, I think. So. Well, guys, yeah, that's all we got. Make sure to subscribe to the pod so you can get us in your feed, and we will be back with an episode at some point next week.
That we will.
John, you got some travel, but you'll be back in time to do a podcast next week. And you can also find us on social media, either our personal social medias or the podcast feed. We take questions. We take topic suggestions. We take any sort of feedback you might have. If you want to answer the question, which of those four skills you would be best at, I'd be very curious what most people think. I think the dodgeball is going to be the easiest answer.
Yeah, I do.
By and large. Because we all played dodgeball as kids. We didn't all go hit home runs, but we all played dodgeball. So.
Yeah, unless you're like a basketball player that like is good.
Right.
You know, like uncontested three-pointers, you know, like if you're like confident in your ability, that's like, okay, maybe, but.
So. Yeah, that could be me. Well, that's all we got, guys. Until next week, we hope you all continue to be well and be safe, and we'll talk to you later.
All right. Cheers, guys.